The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, friends, and welcome to Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. It's so much fun to get to talk to somebody that I actually met years ago. I'm talking about 2008, back when I lived up in Gainesville. We had already moved away from Orlando, but my kids, when they graduated, they moved back down to Orlando. And David and my two daughters that worked with him in a band called Tall Tree played their very first outside concert at a place called House Blend Cafe. It was a coffee house, and the owner of that coffee house is sitting right here with me. Josh Taylor, welcome, man.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
This is like a blast from the past to get to go back all that time. I showed you a picture of your kids when they were sitting in your place right there. House Blend. So yeah, it's really crazy, isn't it?
A great memory. Really cool.
And it is so great to kind of reconnect. Now, you are still involved with House Blend. You're a graduate of Georgia Tech and also a Full Sail.
Correct.
Did you work for a while in the audio industry?
Very short while. I moved out to LA for a brief time and then was doing some sound effects editing out there with a studio called EFX, and then moved back here and mixed the audio for the broadcast at First Baptist Orlando for about 4 years.
Okay.
And then
you would have been prior to Dana Meeks being there then.
That's correct. In fact, Dana came in right after
that's,
me.
That's yep. Awesome.
Exactly. Well, yeah, so then from there, I was in seminary at that time as well, and so we started House Blend in February of 06, and so that's been a full-time adventure since then. So
now what I love about your background, your seminary experience, your heart, all of this really goes into something that you're now doing as a lay elder or a lay pastor at Mosaic.
Correct.
And that is the Marketplace Ministry, Pastor.
Yep.
So you're an example of what Mark Goldstein, our friend, our mutual friend, always talks about taking the gospel of Jesus into the marketplace.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, if you know, we have a segment of the population that is exponentially growing that will never darken the doors of a church and certainly not attend a Sunday event. And so we need to be the church out in the community. And I would say my heart and passion and wiring is to connect the gospel to people that don't want to have anything to do with God and Jesus and church and organized religion, and figure out creative ways to do that and to meet them where they are, which is exactly what Jesus did when he stepped out of heaven, as Philippians 2 tells us, that he mm-hmm. came down into the mess of our space to meet us where we were. So that's really kind of my passion. And then so Marketplace Ministry and the cafe and the farm, which we'll talk about, are all expressions of that.
You know, I came to know the Lord when I was 10 years old, and it would have been in 1963. So that shows you how old I am. But the point is in the 70s, when I was a teenager, and I graduated I graduated high school in 71. And so during the 70s, there was a gigantic revival among young people, the Jesus movement, as it was called, and just a big move of God that drew a lot of young people into churches.
Right.
And they came in, we came in, long hair. It was a hippie revival.
Yep.
Nowadays, fast forward to 2020 and 21, where we are today, there's this almost like an equal exodus or an equal movement, but it's an exodus.
Yeah, I think that's probably observably true in some circumstances, no question. And that's sad, unfortunate.
Now, it is. But now in the middle of all of this, there are many people, I'm being one of them, that's believing that there's a revival breaking out, at least maybe the starting of a revival breaking out. Do you see anything in your work in Marketplace that would maybe be described as a softening of this exodus and maybe a return to a lot of young people?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's interesting. You know, nowadays with social media, we are in some ways more connected than ever, and in some ways more disconnected than ever. And I think there is a hunger for community. I think there's a hunger to, I mean, God's wired us to be loved and to love others. And in some sense, social media has disconnected us from that. And so I think that craving that is written by God on our hearts is there. And so, so I think we have a real opportunity as the church to step into that space and love well. And again, we got to think outside the box and in terms of what it means to actually meet people where they are.
Yeah. Because a lot of people are not really open to come right on a Sunday morning right now.
Correct.
So that
especially
does not
with COVID.
Yeah. And then that's what I started to say. Then you add the pandemic into
right
this. And then this thing that you mentioned, which is a big, big factor, social media. You're right in saying that it brings people together in one sense,
right,
but then it brings them into isolation in another.
Right. Yeah. And probably a more dangerous isolation than maybe ever in history.
Because they're thinking they're connected.
Right.
And they're not really connected.
No, there's no intimacy there. There's no vulnerability there.
No accountability.
There's no accountability there. I mean, everything that we put out on social media tends to be polished and, you know, fake book, as they say. And so we tend to put our best foot forward. And so I think there's a hunger and a craving to be seen. And I think the idea that there is a God who does see us completely, and as Tim Keller has said about the gospel, that we are fully known and yet still fully loved. I think people are craving to be fully known. And so to introduce them to a God who does know them fully and yet still fully loves them is a big deal.
It really is. Tell us about your background, where you grew up, and how you came to know the Lord.
Yep. Yeah. I didn't grow up in church culture. I grew up in Louisiana. And then I got involved, I would say, in middle school kind of time frame in a local Catholic church that was near me. I went through catechism and confirmation. But for me at the time, it was a little bit selfishly motivated, and just they had a youth group. And so it was kind of, you know, had some social benefits for me at the time. But I would say that my experience was that I really didn't hear the gospel until I was 19 in college.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved from Louisiana to Atlanta to go to Georgia Tech. And the very first semester there was a gentleman named Carl who would go around to the freshman dorms. We had a little small basement kitchen, little residential oven and stove there. And he would bring in lasagna dinners and cook them up with salad and breadsticks and iced tea for $2 a student. And so it's a fantastic break from ramen noodles for poor college
mm-hmm,
kids. And
mm-hmm.
So he used that as a springboard to connect the gospel to people. And so
people use food as a really good open door.
Well, yeah.
it's a great plan.
And so kind of a side story in my life, I started washing dishes in a little Chinese restaurant in Baton Rouge when I was 15 and just have been in the restaurant business since then. So for about 33 years now, and just have seen over the years how well food and beverage connects people together. And so that really, as I was in seminary in the early 2000s, I was praying like, God, what do you have for me? And so just over the course of a couple of years of really praying and dreaming and asking him where he was taking me, just the idea of a music venue and cafe kind of began to take shape. And again, just the way that music and food and beverage connects people is rich. And so that's where we went.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, you're so right. Breaking bread. I mean, that's one of the things we read about in scripture,
yep,
and it's always been, I think about the Acts chapter 2 and
right,
the early church right there. They did it. They met each other in house to house, breaking bread together.
Right.
And so that is one of the most, I think, endearing ways to really open up with people.
Yeah, it really is. It tends to tear walls down and allow people to relax and, you know, and kind of shed the anxieties that we tend to carry around with us when you're in a setting where you have to perform. And so I think food and beverage, you know, really breaks through a lot of that really well.
Now, you came to know the Lord at 19 when you really believed and maybe had that heart change and your
right
life changed. Where in here did this call to go to seminary, because certainly not everybody that comes to know the Lord goes to seminary.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I would say that everybody that follows Jesus is called into full-time ministry. The question is, where does your paycheck come from?
That's
and who
right.
signs it? And so, you know, whether you are called to be a missionary at Bank of America or in the bush of Africa, we're all called to be missionaries and to live on mission for the sake of the gospel. So,
is why my kids loved you when they met you. My son told me, he said, "Dad, this guy is a real heart for God."
I love it.
That's neat.
That's a great encouragement. So yeah. Tell him thank you when you talk to him. So in 2099, the millennium, New Year's Eve, 99-2000, is when I met my wife. Her brother and I worked together at a restaurant over on International Drive called Cafe Tutu Tango. We got stuck working that New Year's Eve, and his family came in to hang out with him on New Year's Eve. And so I met his sister, and within 4 months we were engaged and got married in October of 2000. And then pretty soon after that is when I just sensed God calling me into seminary. And at the time, I really didn't know what that meant. I didn't necessarily think it was going to be in the traditional pastor role, but got, again, just as I said, in that season, just over the course of a couple of years. And, you know, having a background in music, I played in a band in Atlanta. And that's really what brought me to Orlando to come to Full Sail and keep, you know, to stay in the music and audio business. And so, yeah, it's been quite a grand adventure since then, for sure.
What instrument do you play?
Drums.
Oh, you're the drummer.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And do you drum still to this day?
I still have the drum kit that I was playing at the time, because I invested way too much in it. And I know that if I got rid of it now, the odds of ever getting that back are highly unlikely. Mm-hmm. And so I know that at some point God will give me opportunity to do that. But right now I know with my bandwidth and time that I'm doing what God's called me to do. And so, but I do miss it for sure.
Oh, it's so much fun to be a part of music, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
And this has really followed you, like you said, all your life. And that's one thing that I think it's so incredibly important that musicians do, is to find the place where God wants them.
Right.
It is so easy with music and with the whole sound and that world, it's so easy just to do it because you like that.
Right.
And I remember a friend of mine one time said something that was it was really a word to my own heart. Mm. He said, it is easy for us to worship music.
Indeed.
And not the Lord.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
not be worshiping Jesus.
Right.
But we can fall in love. I mean, that music, as great as it's used in church and as important as it is in worship, we can actually be serving ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, it's just another of a gazillion expressions where we tend to fall in love with the created rather than the creator. And, mm-hmm. and he's very graciously blessed us with music as a vehicle to reach our emotions and senses and things like that in a unique way that nothing else can. But like you said, when we get into a space where we value that more than him, that's always a dangerous idol, if you will.
Yeah. And Luther said that our hearts are idol factories.
Right.
And it doesn't ever seem to slow down.
No. As soon as we think we've got something under control, it either comes up in a different form or shape, or a different one rears its head. So.
Anybody interested in any technology or recording or music or whatever, in this day and age, there's no shortfall of idols that we can grab a hold of.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's sure. it. When you were in seminary, what did you love to study most?
I would say my passion. So when I heard the gospel when I was 19, again, not having heard that my entire life prior to then, it was just overwhelming and shocking to me that this incredible news, I'd never heard it before, even having some connection in different church circles. How did I go this long and have never heard this? And so it really lit a fire in me and a passion in me, and a passion for evangelism and apologetics. And so I'm actually right now getting a doctorate in apologetics as well. And just just as a vehicle for evangelism, to connect the gospel to people and just being prepared to answer the hard questions that they had. Again, a lot of this goes back to Carl back in college when I first heard the gospel. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy, you know, I was very maybe disenfranchised with the church and felt like it was inauthentic and hypocritical. And so I just pummeled him with question after question after question. And he knew scripture like it was his name and was able to answer my questions. And so that birthed a passion in me to make sure that I was able to do the same. And again, in meeting people that don't want to have anything to do with God and Jesus in church, and they have those hard questions, and we need to be prepared to answer them. So
that's the essence right there of apologetics. Yeah, it's really giving a defense, giving an answer for why we believe.
Right. Yeah. It's not about winning an argument or being right. It's about being able to lovingly and gently help people break through the barriers that they have to the gospel, especially because of the way that the enemy whispers lies into and confusion into our walk. So,
and we really face a challenge that's perhaps more formidable than it was when I was a young person in high school and colleges, and on every college campus or high school campus.
Yeah.
There are things out there today that we just didn't, I just didn't deal with, didn't have to deal with.
Right.
But the kids do today.
That's exactly right.
And it's a tough world, but that has not changed one iota of either the power of the gospel or the plan for sharing the gospel.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, especially parents in the church nowadays really need to prepare their kids as they head out into the real world to be able to answer those hard questions and strengthen the foundation of the faith that they have in their own walk. You know, as they meet their college philosophy professor and the people that they're engaging in the marketplace, if they don't go to college, they're going to encounter some hard questions, and you know, they need to be prepared to answer them, not only for the sake of the person they're talking to, but even for their own faith, so that that's not shaken.
Now, you mentioned that you're a person that is highly educated. You've gone through an undergraduate degree. You've got a master's in recording arts. You've gone to seminary with, I guess, another master's there. And now you're in pursuit of a doctorate.
Correct.
And yet, I like the way you say that not for everyone is college, to say it that way.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's just about continuing education for me, not about a title or a degree or anything like that. So
there are some kids that really will prosper and will do well in some trade school or doing something where they're learning a craft, a trade, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, that's being uncovered now in really significant ways, and I'm excited to see that because college is not for everybody, and it's not that some kids aren't able to go to college. It's that there are actually better pathways you know, if you consider college as an investment in yourself, you have to really examine the return on that investment and then also look at other options. And quite frankly, there's options out there in trade school where you can spend less and get a higher return. Well, that's just wise investment, right? So you can go and actually learn how to do contracting work and construction and things like that, and have an incredible paying job outside of, you know, going to college for a year instead of 4 years. And so it's a significant investment.
Wherever they're going to go, what advice would you have for parents, whether their kid is aiming that way or aiming to go to college? What advice would you have them about getting their hearts prepared for the onslaught of worldliness that they're going to find there?
Boy, there's a big can of worms. We could probably talk for hours on that. But I would say that, number one, we need to prepare our kids with the answers to those hard questions, because I'm finding that I have two girls as well, 16 and 19, one's at UCF currently. And my experience is that they are facing those tougher issues sooner than my perceived experience when I was growing up. I think a lot of that has to do with social media. I think there is a bit of a movement, especially in atheist circles, to squash religion. And so there are more atheist evangelists out there that have taken philosophy, you know, have philosophy degrees and know how to speak intelligently about what they believe, and they know how to deal with certain arguments. And so it used to be you didn't encounter those until, you know, you were at in a college class or sitting in a college environment and, you know, talking around tables and things like that. But now, all of that information and those arguments are available to anybody that has YouTube and TikTok and all of this stuff.
Let's talk more about that in a minute. We're up against a break.
Yeah.
My guest today is Josh Taylor. We'll be back in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. Hey friends, we're back again with Josh Taylor. Josh is the founder of House Blend Cafe and also the Do Good Farm. Now we're going to be talking about that in a moment, But before we get to that, I'd love to finish up our thoughts that we were talking about at the end of segment one, because this is one of the most important heartbeat, I think, that's in my own heart about the next generation and seeing, I'm and have been for years a proponent of parents teaching their children how to not only believe in their own hearts, but also how to live
right.
their lives in a culture that is increasingly antagonistic toward Christians. There was a time, yeah. Josh, and you know, I'm just so sad to see that time be over. But people respected pastors.
Right.
People respected my faith, even if they didn't accept my faith.
Sure.
For their own lives.
Yeah.
But in today's world, we know that if you believe and I believe and we start talking to them, our faith is a threat to them.
Right.
And that's one of the things that you know well from, that you talk about postmodern thought and
right.
what you deal with in the world of studying for a degree in apologetics. It's
right.
it's something that you just got to have to learn how to share. So that's what we were talking about. How can parents help their kids be better prepared?
Yeah. It's a big deal. And I would say, just like there are a lot of resources and connectivity on the atheist side of things, there's also incredible resources out on the interwebs for people that want to deal with those hard questions and find answers to those mm-hmm. hard questions. And so there's some incredible debates by Christian philosophers and apologetics experts out there that you can pull up on YouTube. And so that's a great resource, And so I think as parents, it's wise of us to make sure that we understand what the ratio of time is that our kids are experiencing the things of the world and the things of the church, if you will, in scripture and making sure that there's a good ratio. And Philippians 4 tells us that we need to focus on the things that are pure and lovely and commendable. And so as parents, are we actually making that happen in our kids' lives and challenging mm-hmm. them to make those decisions for themselves? And so, I think I have found as a dad that it's helpful to lead and inspire them in that and to help them understand why it matters versus just correcting behavior.
And I think that if they don't have it in their heart, if they don't have those questions really rounded out in their own mind, when they get out there in the world and some of this overwhelming, you're right when you say there's a lot of evangelists on the side of atheism.
Right.
And
Absolutely.
They're prepared for it.
Yeah. And I guess because of social media nowadays, I'm also seeing that earlier on. I'm seeing kids prepared with those questions and answers on the atheist side as early as middle school and high school. And so it's mm-hmm. not just a matter of what do they experience when they graduate and leave home. They're also experiencing it now. So I guarantee you, whatever parents are hearing us talk right now, have kids in middle and high school mm-hmm. that are experiencing hard questions that they don't have answers to.
Yeah, it's so true. And they've got to get ready. There's so many resources. One that I'd love for parents, if you're listening right now, you'd say, who can I talk? Where can I get something? Del Tackett put out the Truth Project a number of years ago. I had a chance to meet Del and interview him this yeah. past summer. Oh, my goodness. And it's like getting to sit with one of the heroes of your faith. I mean,
yeah.
he is that, but he has been doing this for many, many years.
It's a great resource.
Yeah. Focus
Absolutely.
On the Family now has picked that up, and the Truth Project. Check that out. I encourage all parents to really learn all that you can learn about helping your kids be prepared to defend their faith and know how to walk and know how to stay true to the gospel.
Yep, indeed.
That's it. Now, this Do Good Farm,
yes.
this is another expression in your words of this marketplace ministry
yep.
of taking what you have been given from God and
right.
taking it out there. So how did this come about?
Yeah, so to try and keep the story somewhat short here, we started the cafe to be an expression in the hands and feet of Jesus. And it takes money to go and change the world. And so rather than always having to do golf tournaments and fundraisers and things like that, we wanted to start businesses that that gave those profits away. So we've committed 100% of our net profits to impact things like ending human trafficking and bringing clean water to villages that don't have it. And so we are, so this Do Good Farm is an expression of that. It's ending hunger and malnutrition, but doing it in a sustainable way where we aren't just shipping boxes of rice and beans over and over again, but actually helping teach people how to and empowering people to grow the food. There's no reason anybody on our planet should be hungry and malnourished when God's made a way to grow really nutritious and delicious foods, and we can just teach them how to do it. So,
and you do that? You send people out? Or is this just a farm where this is happening in the United States?
No, we have projects all over the world. We have currently, we're working with a group of missionaries out in Burundi, Africa. It's a tiny little country right in the center of the continent. They're doing incredible work there. And so we want to help equip them to grow food to feed the kids at the schools that they are operating and impact the malnutrition that they have. And so for a lot of schools and orphanages in that environment, they're eating porridge and rice and beans. And so we want to increase the nutrient value of what they're able to eat, but do it in a sustainable way. So if you've got $10,000, you can go buy $10,000 worth of food. But then once you give it away and they eat, their bellies are going to be hungry again, and you're really back to square one. So mm-hmm. if we can invest in systems that are going to continue to produce food indefinitely, that's our hope and dream.
I think a lot of people I talk to are always surprised when they find that many countries really not only don't have safe water, they really don't have water.
That's exactly right.
Accessible immediately.
Right.
And that's like a staple that we just take for granted, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It's staggering, really, the statistics that are out there. You know, we are heartbroken, and entire news stations and you know, when an airplane crashes, you know, 200, 300 people die in an airplane crash. Well, 20,000 kids today are going to die because they lack access to clean water, basic nutrition, and things that we take for granted when it comes to, you know, just getting an ear infection, and you just go to the doctor and get antibiotics for it. Well, you know, that can lead to deafness, which leads to kids not being able to grow up and provide for themselves. And so, yeah, I mean, those basic things that we take for granted here are having a devastating impact on our planet right now.
So how is this sustained? How do you do all of this?
Yeah. So, there's a fantastic book out there that I'm sure you've discussed here on this program called When Helping Hurts. And the idea is that us in the church can often, with fantastic intentions, loving intentions, gospel intentions, can go into a setting and do more harm than good in some of those spaces. And so, to give you the Cliff Notes version of what that book is about, there's really three phases of helping people. There's relief, recovery, and then development. So relief is you have a disaster, fires, tsunami, earthquake, whatever it is, you have to get in immediately with food, water, and shelter and save lives. But that really should stay in relief mode for a short period of time, weeks, maybe months. Mm-hmm. But then that should shift from relief into rehab, where you begin to rebuild the infrastructure of the community. And then that should also very quickly shift into development, where now we're handing the baton back off to the people in that community and empowering them to provide for themselves. And remember, God created work before the fall. So before sin corrupted everything, God created. They were to work and tend the garden. So we are workers. That's who we were made to be. And so we want to empower people to become who God has created them to be. And so our mission really fits in that development, that third phase, if you will. It's not that it's bad to go and give food away. You need to do that
especially in phase one of that.
Exactly. In disaster mm-hmm. settings, you mm-hmm. have to get in there and save lives. It's when years and years go by and we're still handing out food over and over and over again, that it ends up doing more harm than good. It creates dependence. They lose the strength and the muscles that they have to be able to, and I mean that figuratively, you know, not only in their body, but emotionally, to go and provide for themselves and work hard and understand what it means to be who God's made them to be.
Mm-hmm. The old adage of give the man a fish and you fed him for a day, teach him to fish, you fed him for a lifetime.
That's exactly right.
But that concept of work is a diminished factor in our world today too, right?
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, it's really sad to see how we as a culture right now are almost being led into a point where we're just depending more and more and more on the government.
Right.
And yeah. That can't be for believers.
Right. And that really is what the heart of that book gets to. And they just do a fantastic job showing case study after case study of why that matters and how it's, you know, having a a devastating negative impact when we have great intentions.
Now, is there a physical do-good farm here in Central Florida?
Yeah, we're in Winter Garden. We're just down from the Roper YMCA near West Orange High School. We also have one other project that we're working on currently is a farm-to-table school cafeteria concept at Hope Charter School and Legacy High School. So we'll actually grow the food that's used to feed the kids there. We just recently...
How many acres do you have?
So the farm for that is 2 acres, and it's designed to feed 500 kids a day. And so the idea behind that is to solve two really significant problems. It's very challenging for the public school system, especially, to be able to afford nutritious produce. And nutrition plays a huge role in how our brains and bodies function. And God's made and designed incredible machines in our brains and bodies when we give it the tools it needs to do its job. So it's just like a car. If you don't put the right tools in the car, it's not going to function properly. And so malnutrition malfunctions even in the food deserts of our own inner cities here in America. So we've also done ministry for about 10 years on the east side of Winter Garden in a neighborhood where breakfast for a lot of those kids is a bag of chips or hot Takis or a Snickers bar on the way to the bus stop. They just hit the convenience store. And then we wonder why they struggle to have energy and stay awake and pay attention and retain information. And so there's that first problem, is being able to afford nutritious produce. But then secondly, even if there was some magic way to afford it, it doesn't guarantee that the kids will eat it and not just scrape it off of their plates. But we have found that when kids have an opportunity to participate in the process, they're much more likely to actually eat their vegetables. And so having the farm on school property really matters. And so the idea is that they're actually participating in that. And then the farm now becomes an incredible STEM learning laboratory. So for people that are familiar with STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math, they're actually able to, in this interactive learning environment, take concepts that would normally be boring sitting at a desk reading out of a textbook. Now you get to go on the farm and you get to titrate water for nitrites and pH, and there's soil chemistry, and then you're doing math when you're calculating. Okay, one of the farming methods that we use is called aquaponics, and it's the same ecosystem right. That you have in the lakes, rivers, and streams. And so you get to go and net out 5 fish out of the tanks and take an average weight. And then, you know, if you've got 400 fish in your system and they each weigh 2 pounds a piece, now you calculate you've got 800 pounds of biomass, and now they eat 3% of their body weight per day. So you calculate that out, and then you divide that by 3 feedings in a day. And now you get to actually go and measure out this math problem that you just did and throw the food in and see the fish go crazy over the food. And so it's this really interactive, exciting, immersive learning environment. And now they're also surrounded by the food that they're helping to grow. And it just increases the passion for them to go out and eat it. And so kids that would normally turn their nose up at a plate of vegetables are eating crazy things like cactus and things, you know, all kinds of stuff that they would normally never eat. And so it's just been really fun to see that.
Well, as long happen. As there have been kids who snubbed veggies.
Right.
And so this is really exciting to see. You guys have found a way, a back door into this whole desire.
Right. Exactly.
So that you're creating the desire to eat the vegetables.
Yeah. And they now understand that food doesn't just come from a box on the grocery store shelf, but actually that got it. And here's the thing that really drives me from an evangelism standpoint is now we get to highlight the incredible brilliance of God's creation. And when you get to see how nature works, and all of our farming methods just use what God created in nature, but we use it to grow food. When you get to see that and see the brilliance of how it all comes together, it highlights His brilliance and beauty. And so it's an incredible way to be salt and light in that space. And even in a public school setting where you can't use churchy language, you can still introduce them to the beauty of creation. And God's revealed Himself in creation, as Paul wrote in Romans 1. And then a secondary desire for this is to partner local American schools and have sister schools in developing nations with farms as well. And so now they are doing experiments together and testing things and sharing data and communicating. You know, nowadays we can use video conferencing to reach anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people in America have discovered Zoom conferencing because of businesses that shut down during the pandemic. And now we're opening back up, but these Zoom meetings are still going to be around.
Indeed. Absolutely.
They're going to be there. I'm just amazed. I have one more question before we take another break. You mentioned public schools and our inability in a lot of these scenarios to mention the Lord. But what do you think about the public schools' opinion of what you're doing on the Do Good Farm? What are their thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's been received really well. And again, we don't come to the table Bible thumping, if you will, but we just allow and trust God to open the doors that He opens and to be able to talk about Him. But if nothing else, we get to introduce kids to just the brilliance of creation, but then also as we partner local and global schools together as well. Now they're being introduced to gospel principles where I recognize that there are other people out in the world that don't have the things that I take for granted. And so we begin to help them see that it's not about me, right? Mm-hmm. And we begin to see that, hey, there's other people that are hurting more than I am. And it also gives us really important perspective in the challenges and trials that we experience here in America.
You may have read his book. Milton Vincent wrote a book on basically, it was called The Gospel Primer or Primer, depending on how you pronounce that. And one of the concepts that he brings in there, and it sounds like this is what you're doing, is a displacement. He was talking about if you want to get stronger and overcome a sin, it's not to work harder at the sin, but it's to displace it by becoming more enthralled by the Lord and more time spent with the Lord, more time spent in the Word. That displaces, because you change your taste, if you will.
Yeah, and I really think that when you study the Ephesians 6 armor of God, that's what the gospel shoes concept is. And how beautiful are the feet of those that are living on mission. And if I were to tell you right now not to think about a pink elephant, you instantly think about a pink elephant. And I think for so long in the church, we've spent too much time preaching around behavior modification and parenting around behavior modification, stop sinning versus actually focusing on the mission that God has called you to and the person that God's called you to be. And so it's a matter of living on purpose and on mission for the sake of others. And you cannot go east and west at the same time. I cannot focus on myself at the same time that I'm focusing on God and others. And so, yeah, I wholeheartedly believe that.
That's well said. Josh Taylor is my guest today. And he is with the House Blend Cafe, also the Do Good Farm. And we're going to be back with him. He's a marketplace minister. We're going to be talking about his work at Mosaic coming up in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. My guest today is Josh Taylor. Josh is a founder of House Blend Cafe. We talked about that wonderful cafe. It's like a coffee house in the Winter Garden area, and it's beautiful. My kids played there back in 2008 and I think again in 2009, but it's just really neat. And I don't think they're doing the same kind of a concept that they did back then, right?
Yeah, we don't do live music quite as much. We certainly have taken a break with all the pandemic craziness as well, but I love live music, being a drummer myself. So.
Yeah. I love it as well. And this whole thing about what you're doing with the Do Good Farm are expressions. All of these things are expressions of what God's put in your heart. Now you're studying, you're in a doctorate on apologetics.
Correct.
And that is something that is tough in this day and age. I mean, the amount of work that you have to go through to get a doctorate. Give us just a little bit of overview of where you are in this process.
Literally just started this semester. And it's not something that I'm pursuing for a title or a degree, really more for continuing education and just being able to be better prepared to answer the hard questions that I do face on a daily basis. So,
but you will get a doctorate in the study. There.
That's correct. Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And so you're one of these guys that realize that whether or not it's going to be in this type of school or that type of school, we always have to keep learning.
Yes. Always.
Yeah. And this culture that we're in right now does not live like that.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's a lot of people that attend YouTube University, and so we're getting educated whether we know it or not.
That's
the question is, what are we being educated with?
I've never heard it called YouTube University.
Yeah.
That's great. But that is something. So tell us how this interacts now with your role as marketplace minister, as a pastor at your church at Mosaic.
Yeah. So that really is a passion to help people see, as I mentioned earlier, my passion wiring, and I would say strengths given by God is to see the gospel connected to people that will never attend a Sunday morning event or darken the doors of a church for an event. And so we've got to meet people where they are. And so we've got to equip the church to go and be the church out where they live 40 to 60 to 80 hours a week. And so again, everybody that follows Jesus is called into full-time ministry. The question is, who signs your paychecks? Mm-hmm. Because ultimately it's provided by God. So whether you are a doctor or a banker, whatever, a teacher, a student, whatever that looks like, that's the mission field that God has called you to. And so I think it's unfortunate that we have, in some sense, inadvertently glamorized, you know, what it means to be a missionary. And that means that I've got to go to Africa or South America or a developing nation. But the reality is that America is an unreached, has a lot of unreached people groups.
It is absolutely becoming more so every day.
Absolutely.
And I'm not trying to put our country down. I love our country. I'm grateful for it.
Yep.
But we have to realize right now that we are fighting a battle just even with our own government is right now not leaning into its history of welcoming God or Christianity or the church.
Right.
It's not. And so there are people who are bought into that, and we just have to see that this is, I like that analogy that we hear often, it's a marathon and not a sprint.
That's exactly right.
So taking marketplace ministry, Josh, as a marathon, speak some encouragement to people, let's say, they've been on a job for 10 years,
right,
but they really haven't let their faith be known.
Yep.
How can they do that, and how should they do that as a first step?
Yeah, the first step and the daily step and the moment by moment step is to pray and listen to God. Paul says to pray without stopping, right? Well, that probably means that prayer is much more about listening to the Spirit of God and being in tune with the Spirit of God, and not just talking. And so we have the Spirit of God in us who knows the people around us better than they even know themselves. And so we can get incredible discernment and insight. And I've been in conversations where God has given me unique discernment into a situation or another person's life that I was able to ask the right probing questions and really step into spaces that were maybe uninviting, but he's opened doors. And so the bottom line is there's not a canned behavior approach, things that we need to go and do, a checklist that we need to go and do. We need to relate with the Spirit of God, listen to him, and allow him to open up those doors. And constantly, whether you're in the grocery store line or at work, just constantly saying, God, who do you want me to share with today? How do you want me to share with them? Is it actually preaching the gospel today? Sometimes that might be the scenario. Maybe it's, I need to bring this person a meal because they're going through a hard time. Maybe it's, I need to go have coffee with them because they're really struggling in a certain area of their life. But the old adage is, absolutely, positively, 100% true. People do not care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so when we are the hands and feet of Jesus lived out daily, we earn the right to share the gospel. And it gives credibility and value to the gospel that we share.
And for those that believe that their personality is not big enough or strong enough or funny enough or knowledgeable enough, that's right, really not an excuse.
It's not an excuse. People, we have the opportunity to go and love our neighbor well, and we're all called to do that. That's both extroverts and introverts. And there are ways that people who would qualify themselves as introverts can go and be the hands and feet of Jesus to people. And again, that can be through tangible ways, through sharing a meal, through, again, breaking bread is such a great relational vehicle. Help cut your neighbor's yard, you know, whatever, that you just constantly be listening, asking God, how can I be your hands and feet to my neighbor today, to my coworker, to my fellow students, whatever environment you're in.
You just touched on what my next question was going to be. How do you pray? Because I believe a lot of people aren't praying for those doors to open up, or maybe those acts of kindness. There was a book one time, Random Acts of Kindness. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we need to be always doing. But for those that aren't praying, how can they pray better? How do you pray?
Yeah. Well, James says, if you lack wisdom, ask for it. It's one of the things that scripture guarantees that if we ask for it, God's going to grant it. And then it says right on the heels of that, if you ask for it, trust that he's going to give it to you. And so as we are driving and heading to work, be praying and listening. And I think when we wake up in the morning, from the time that we open our eyes to the time that we shut them at the end of the day, it's just a constant communion with the Father. And that's the brilliance of what prayer is all about. It's walking in the cool of the garden that He's put us in, mm-hmm. And relating with the Father. And so it's just listening and saying, hey, you know, God, and then as you, when you have that mentality and framework, and worldview, if you will, now every person that I see, I'm asking, okay, God, how can I be the hands and feet of Jesus to that person? And maybe it's something, maybe it's nothing, maybe it's a tangible act, maybe it's actual words, but just constant listening to the Spirit of God's leading.
Well, there's the first request right there. Lord, how can I be your hands and feet today?
Right. Yep.
And if you begin just with that, you might be surprised at the doors that God would open.
Absolutely. Because that's, you're praying in His will when you're doing that. Because that is your purpose, is to know Him and then to make Him known to others, period.
Yeah, that's right. Now, and not only that, I think of the old shorter catechism, to enjoy Him.
Right.
And do you think that that's a common problem? A lot of people who would be believers, they really don't realize that they are to enjoy God.
Oh, yeah. And my experience has been in living on mission is there is no greater joy than to get to see the Spirit of God actually work. And when He speaks to you, and when you see Him move in somebody else's life, and when He opens doors, because when you live with a mission mentality, you constantly are depending on God to move. And so then when you get to see Him move, it just highlights His love, and you get to participate with the Father in that. And it's just an incredible adventure.
I tell you, it is an adventure. And I remember often, I've told this story before, but my good friend Danny Jones appeared at my door. We had a plan, then he was sick. So we canceled the plan. But then that morning, the plan was to trim trees. He's knocking on my door on that Saturday morning, and I'm thinking, dude, what are you doing here? You're sick. He goes, well, I am sick. I'm not that sick that I can't do it. I don't feel well, but I feel like we're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
And so he stepped out of what was even a not necessarily a good physical feeling in his body to say, it's more important for me to serve my friend.
Yeah.
And that's what he said to me. Mm. It's more important for us to spend time together than it is for me to worry about my feeling good.
Yeah,
and
good.
You know, as we worked, he got the feeling better. It's funny how that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was God's strength, giving him the strength that he needed to do what God called him to do.
And that's an example right there. How, Lord, can I be your hands and feet today? That's a simple beginning of a prayer.
Yep.
But it's a big one.
Right. And then listen and trust that he's going to tell you.
What's 2022 going to hold for Do Good Farm?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. So we are currently working with John Rivers on his Four Roots project. And
from Four Rivers. Yeah,
yep, exactly. So,
yeah.
So we'll be doing that. That's here on the west side of downtown Orlando. We're also working with a developer to install an AgriHood, which is a residential development out on the east side of town by UCF. But instead of being centered around the country club lifestyle, it's entirely centered around agriculture and farming, where the food infrastructure is built into the neighborhood, if you will. And we just are passionate about rethinking how we approach our food infrastructure. And then again, that project in Burundi, Africa, we're hoping to build at least two farms there, or at least get them designed, and we've got to do the fundraising for it.
Well, we're finding, every one of us are finding this to be true, that when you go to the grocery store today, it costs a lot more than it did just a short couple of months ago. And my wife even noted to me, she goes, I think the bread loaves are shorter in length than what they used to be. So we're paying more and getting less.
Yes, we are. It's crazy. You can walk out with two bags and it's, you know, $50-$60+ at, you know, at the grocery store. It's crazy.
It is crazy. One of the things that I think before we go here today, if you could speak a word to those that are not feeling hope right now because of the troubles that are in our country with inflation being a bit of a runaway right now.
Yeah.
What word could you give?
Goodness. There are a lot of facets to that question, frankly. So number one, and from the, you know, starting from the top there, God is in control. He's got this. This is not a surprise to him. He's not shocked and
excellent
and fumbling about figuring out what to do. He knows exactly what's going on. Along those lines, I had a a good friend that had a seminary professor who asked the class, who do you think was the most influential Christian for Christianity in the 20th century? And so he gave them time to answer. A lot of people mentioned, you know, Billy Graham's of the world and people like that. And he, after giving them time to do that, suggested to them that it was actually General Mao in China, because the persecution that he put on the church in China lit a fire that caused it to explode. And so we need not be afraid of challenging times and persecution, because God can actually use that to really refine us, refine the church, and light a fire under the church that can cause it to just go gangbusters. So, not that we want to persecution, and we're certainly not going to go and seek it, but if it comes, that can be a tool in the hands of God to see the gospel go crazy.
And it certainly was in the first century church.
Yeah, for sure.
And they were not all that different than we,
yep,
in the sense that they probably would not have gone had that persecution not happened.
That's exactly right. And I use this illustration all the time. If I were to shine a flashlight in this room that's well lit right now, we wouldn't be able to see it very well. But if the lights got dark, if it got dark in here and I shine a flashlight, you can see it really well. So sometimes we get the opportunity to be the hands and feet of Jesus even more so, and shine brighter when it's dark around us. And so we need not fear that. And then when it is dark, then we get to see him calm the storms. We get to see him do the things that only God can do, because we're 100% dependent on him.
That's well said. Josh Taylor, my guest today. Josh, give us your website.
Yeah. So houseblendcafe.com, dogoodfarm.org.
Dogoodfarm.org. Josh is involved in both of these, also a marketplace minister at Mosaic in Winter Garden, and we just can't thank you enough. It's really great to catch back up.
Yeah, it's been great to be here, and great to revisit that incredible memory from Houseblend from 2008.
Yeah,
so much fun.
With the band Tall Tree. That was a lot of fun back in that day, and I just thank you for coming in, and friends, we thank you for joining us as well. We'll see you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.